Chapter 2. It was 6 months prior, and Charlie Gault had already been working on billionaire Brockton Milbury's top-secret As Brew project for nearly 5 years when the call came in. "Chuck?" a voice asked over his portable comms unit. "Hey, Vicky," he replied, smoothly merging with the vehicles around him. Only one person ever called him Chuck, despite the many times he made it known he did not really like the nickname. And that person was Vicky Rogers, the head of the entire R&D team spearheading the eccentric visionaries project. "You sitting down, Chuck?"
"I'm driving, Vicky, so I would certainly hope so."
"You could be using an autopilot for all I know," she replied, "but that's unimportant." Anything not on Vicky's agenda was deemed unimportant, and that included time off, weekends, and even vacations.
"You sound agitated. Is everything all right?"
he asked, staring out the window, pleasantly distracted by the passing scenery, as his vehicle effortlessly lifted off, flowing smoothly with a few other permitted conveyances in the air. He was, in fact, using his autopilot, but he wouldn't tell her as much.
"It's time," she said, barely containing her excitement. "Tests have come back, and the Einstein-Rosen stabilizer works."
"We know it works, Vicky. We've known for over a year. The question is, can we maintain a stable enough field to allow for safe transit? That's the tricky bit. The distance between the Earth and Mr. Milbury's test facility orbiting Mars is no small matter. The device has to be able to sustain for all 33.9 million miles, which will be covered in a flash. In theory, none of this has been real-world tested for those power parameters.
But Chuck, the prototype skiff just made the moon jump."
Charlie audibly gasped. He knew it was possible, the bending of space to allow for rapid transit from one point to another. But their energy sources were simply not powerful enough to allow much more than a several thousand mile hop. It was impressive, but it would not alter the course of human history. At least, not yet. Their work could change that one day.
"That wasn't scheduled," he said. "First space trials aren't even slated until 2 years from now. It's still in the experimental phase."
"I know, but Mr. Milbury himself greenlit the test."
"He's a dilettante, not a scientist. He should have waited."
"He's a genius, Chuck, and he's our boss. If he wants an early test, we give him an early test."
Charlie sighed. He knew how this would go. Protest would be useless. It would be just like every other time the billionaire had a whim. Charlie and his team would whir into action like the residents of a kicked anthill, frantically tweaking ops parameters and pulling 72-hour engineering brainstorming sessions to meet the new goals their patron had just pulled out of his ass. An ideal work environment? It was not.
"Okay, so we know the unit works on short hops. Christ, I can't believe he went and did that," he groaned.
"How much did it drain the reactor? We'll need that data if we're going to figure load requirements for the longer jump." A brief silence hung in the air.
"All of it," she finally replied.
"All? It drained the whole core? That's impossible."
"Nope. Apparently it's very possible, as we've just learned. The fusion core is cold as ice."
Draining a battery was one thing, but actually sucking the life out of a nuclear fusion reactor was, up until today at least, impossible. Charlie put on his best game face and stayed calm.
"Treat it like just another glitch to work through, Charlie. Don't freak out," he silently told himself, taking a deep breath and counting to three before speaking.
"So once again, it seems we are faced with a power problem," he said, managing to sound relatively calm. "Only now, our only test reactor is toast.
Think he'll spring for a new one?"
"We have other reactors, Chuck. Bigger ones."
He knew what she was speaking of. He just couldn't believe she was saying it.
"Those are supposed to power the ship, Vicky. We've been working on that thing for nearly 5 years. You can't just go and steal our work from Milbury's impulses."
"Relax, we're not going to strip them out of your ship, Chuck. Your pet project is safe. The As Brew will remain intact."
"Good, because we're going to run the next test with the ship."
Charlie fell silent. They couldn't be serious, could they? Taking hundreds of billions of dollars worth of research and work and turning it into a science experiment? It was folly. Madness. And just the sort of thing his quirky employer would do. He sighed, resigned to his project's unfortunate fate. "All right," he finally said, knowing it was a fight he simply could not win. "When do I have to deliver it?
I've got to warn you, the ship still needs a lot of work and a proper shakeout to get any bugs out of the systems. You'll have plenty of time to shake them out.
I'm sorry. That sounded like you said I would be doing it.
That's right, Chuck. You've been promoted. You're no longer design lead. You're now the official specialist for engineering and flight ops. Congratulations.
You know I don't fly, Vicky. Space and me, we don't get along.
It's a great honor to be one of the first humans to travel utilizing this tech. And you were a key designer. You should be excited, not pouting like a little baby.
I don't do space flights. That was made clear when I signed on to this project.
Silence hung icily over the open line. Finally, she spoke. You do realize what this will do to you, to your career?
I'll have to find another job. Maybe I'll teach this time, he replied.
You won't, you know. You'll be blacklisted from every major research facility, shunned from reputable universities. Is that what you want?
He wouldn't do that, Charlie said, only half believing himself.
He wants us badly, Charles, so yes, he would.
She had called him Charles.
Suddenly he realized just how deep the shit he was standing in truly was. If forced to estimate, he'd have said roughly eyeball level, and rising. He had some savings, sure, but not nearly enough to become an unemployed, and far worse, unemployable man. A choice would have to be made, and his options were either bad or worse. When the Asbru launched 6 months later, for what was only supposed to be a short test flight of its main drive and reactor systems, it left Earth carrying a greatly reduced crew, but enough to run some smaller experiments in the shakeout process. Charlie, miserable and still a little queasy from launch, found his reluctant ass planted firmly in the engineering and ops seat within the command module. The captain's second-in-command flashed him a look.
I know you don't like spaceflight, but I'm glad you're with us, Charlie.
Thanks, Rika. They'd worked well together in the months leading up to that day, and he felt confident he could just not trust her abilities as the captain's number one, but her counsel as a friend as well. She'd helped him get over his crushing fear of flight, and now he was in her hands.
Okay, everybody, the captain said over comms. The countdown has started. Full systems test in 1 minute. This will just be a power test in orbit. Yang, are all of your gadgets and test samples good?
Yes, Captain, Winifred, Winnie, Yang replied. The critters are all caged up and secure. We're all buttoned up and ready to go.
How about you, Mr. Quick? I hope we won't need your services, but are you set to go?
Yes, Captain, standing by.
All right, then. Everyone sit tight and let the computers do their thing. This is automated and should take less than 2 minutes to cycle through.
What Captain Raynor didn't know was that a lone microcircuit was about to fail in the most spectacular manner. A fluke of poor quality control, caused by a rather embarrassing oversight, had allowed it to slip into the mix. It was a tiny thing, but it was enough.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, Captain Raynor counted down.
Nothing happened. Then the reality spun and went to shit, pausing to hit the fan on the way for good measure.
What the hell's going on?
Gasparri managed to utter through the forces assailing her before vomiting on the deck. Charlie knew. It was obvious to him. Obvious and horrifying.
Shut it down! Shut down the power systems!
But it was too late. The ship had torn a hole in space, a massive wormhole that had formed in a flash.
We're being pulled in!
Charlie shouted as the ship spun on its axis and lurched toward the gaping maw.
Give me full power, all engines! Get us free from...
Captain Raynard tried to say. The ship was swallowed whole before he could finish his thought, then was abruptly spat out unceremoniously on the other side of the wormhole, somewhere very far away, just as the space anomaly vanished in a flash.
Status, the captain barked over the warning sirens.
Life support operational. Drive systems online but losing power. Navs are all shot to hell, Gasparri said.
What hit us, Charlie?
It was an unstable Einstein-Rosen bridge, he said, shell-shocked. I think we somehow tore open a wormhole. It shouldn't even have been possible. We should be dead. But for whatever reason, the same malfunction that got us here also protected us.
From what?
From being turned inside out and boiled down to jelly, he replied.
Captain, we're being pulled in toward a gravitational field, Gasparri said.
Something is reeling us in.
Visuals on all monitors.
Hi, Captain, she replied. The screens flickered on for a moment before going black, but it was enough. It was a huge, round shape, an object with immense gravitational pull.
Buckle up, everyone. This is going to get bumpy,
Captain Raynard barked over shipwide comms.
What was that? Charlie asked.
It looked like a planet.
Charlie strapped in tight and wondered what colossal design flaw had escaped notice. What the hell had managed to go so wrong for things to come to this? The answer might have surprised him.